You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to a Wednesday episode of Locked On Rockets, the only podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. Late last night, the Rockets got their franchise record-setting 65th win of the year, moving to 65-16 on the year with a 105-99 win at Staples Center over the Lakers. Every win, of course, at this point is a new franchise record for the Rockets, given that the prior record, 93-94, the championship year, was just 58. Chris Paul led the way, 22 points, 6 assists, 9 of 14 shooting, 4 of 7 from behind the arc. So it's nice to see Chris starting to feel good again, especially from the field. You can see that after missing 5 of 6 games a couple of weeks ago, he's starting to get his touch back, which is a really positive sign going into the playoffs. But ultimately for the Rockets, with the number 1 seed clinched and having been clinched for over 10 days, this was like a preseason game. The result on the floor didn't matter, although certainly it's nice to win. The same can be said with tonight's season finale, regular season finale, in Sacramento. The goal for the Rockets, of course, was to stay healthy, and unfortunately, and what most of this episode is going to be about, they did not. That's because Luke Bamute, as you probably know by now, very versatile reserve forward, went up for a dunk in the first half. Thomas Bryant came down on his injured shoulder, which he dislocated in December, missed a month, and now that shoulder is dislocated again. So we're waiting for clarification. From what I've heard to this point, Luke Bamute flew back to Houston overnight. He's going to undergo an MRI here in Houston this morning, and at that point we'll get a little more clarification. But overall, it's exactly what the Rockets are trying to avoid, which was an injury in these final 10 days in which there's that much to play for, and ultimately, the Rockets will at least start the playoffs, in my opinion, shorthanded, because it's pretty hard to fathom him coming back in just 3 or 4 days from an injury that significant. So, as far as today's show, we're going to start by discussing the medical side of what happened to Luke Bamute. Segment 2, we'll discuss the basketball. And then segment 3, we'll actually talk about tonight, a bit of a primer in terms of what to watch for, not so much with the Rockets, but around the NBA in terms of who they could play in the first round, who they could play in the second round, because the scenarios, it's all going to be final tonight when the regular season comes to an end, and we'll know who the Rockets are going to play in round 1 as the 1-8, and who they're likely to play in the 4-5 matchup in round 2. So we'll discuss that in the final segment as a brief preview, and then, of course, tonight, once the matchup is set, we'll have more intel specifically on the first round with who the Rockets are going to play in that initial best of 7 series, and hopefully I'll be able to get a view from the other side as well on how that team may match up with the Rockets. So stay tuned for that. Most of this episode, though, let's discuss Luke. As far as the medical side of it, it's a re-injury to the shoulder. Now, the good news, if there is any, we heard from Mike D'Antoni after the game in LA, courtesy of Jonathan Fagan, Rockets beat writer for the Chronicle that's with the team. Mike said that he did not think it was as severe as the last time. And that sort of jives with some of the medical reports we've heard from the experts in the sports medicine community on Twitter, which is that a redislocation, while it sounds bad, and ultimately it is, it's not as painful. And that kind of jives with what you saw in the immediate aftermath from Luke on the floor, which is they knew it was severe, but you did not see him going through the extreme pain that he did the first time. So in theory, if it's a pain tolerance issue, it may not be as daunting as the first time. Also, the first time he missed a month from mid-December to mid-January. Keep in mind, they said initially he would miss 2 to 3 weeks. It's very possible he could have come back earlier, so I don't necessarily think the timetable would be the same, even if it's the exact same grade 1, grade 2, whatever it may be, because the Rockets, in the middle of a long season, they're going to be more conservative. They've treated injuries that way all year long. So I wouldn't say that, well, just because he missed a month the first time, he's necessarily going to miss a month the next time, because there's obviously a lot higher sense of urgency in the playoffs, and especially since this is a re-injury, I don't know that you're necessarily going to be looking at it from through the same prism that you did the first time. And ultimately, I don't think Luke is shocked by this. If you've watched the Rockets, really ever since he came back, you have seen moments of discomfort from him in that shoulder. You've seen him flexing it a few times. Really, it was a ticking time bomb. So if it didn't happen tonight, it could have very easily happened in the playoffs. And honestly, it might have been even worse if it happened in the playoffs, because to have to adjust on the fly whenever there's just a weird type of contact. And in this case, it wasn't anything weird as far as the play. It's not like he just fell on it wrong and it was a freak accident. No, he went in for a dunk. Thomas Bryant went to contest and came down on that right shoulder. And it's the type of contact that happens a lot in the NBA. So realistically, when you consider that it's a re-injury, this was probably going to happen at some point anyway. That shoulder, and especially now that it's popped out a second time, as we heard from David Chow, Pro Football Doc on Twitter, who makes a living now grading these injuries, has worked in the NBA before. Now that he has had a second dislocation of that same shoulder, the reality is that he's probably going to need surgery to stabilize it at some point. The question is if he can make it through the playoffs before doing so, and there's a lot of questions that go into that. Another thing to keep in mind, Luke Bamute is playing this year on an extraordinarily discounted deal. He's playing for the league minimum when he deserves, based on his defensive impact, when the league's better and certainly more versatile defenders, a lot more. But I think teams struggle to, even in this day and age, in 2018, fully gauge and appreciate the value defensively. And you can't blame the guy if he wants surgery sooner rather than later, because certainly with the same injury occurring multiple times, you're probably going to need that. You can't blame him financially if he says, look, I'm making the minimum, I need to position myself for the rest of my career, and he goes that route. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, because ultimately, Luke's a competitor, and I think there's something to be said for if he goes out there and plays well, especially if he guts it out and gives them something against, especially later in the playoffs, a team like the Warriors, Utah, whoever it may be, then maybe he further bolsters his value in the offseason, even if he has to have shoulder surgery at the beginning of it. But keep in mind, it's not our money. It's easy for us to say. So when you're talking about a guy who's already playing at a significant discount and was probably looking to get paid this summer, then that's yet another wrinkle to consider when it comes down to, is he willing to delay the surgery and play through pain, which is what it's going to be. I don't think it's impossible for him to play through it. Of course, we'll find out later this morning. Could be grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. I'm tending to think it's lesser because of what we heard from Mike D'Antoni, but you never know for sure until you have the MRI. One small consolation I could see for Luke is that his style of play might be a little less dependent on full range of motion in that shoulder than others. Now, yes, in terms of his driving to the bucket, I do think it hurts not being able to trust that shoulder, because the quick dunk he had in which he hurt himself, yeah, that's kind of a staple of his game. That happens a lot. But in terms of his primary value, which is his length, his defense, his IQ, those are things that he can do really even if that shoulder is nowhere near 100%. Now, if he can't shoot as well from three, then there is a point of diminishing returns to where if other teams feel like they don't have to guard him out of the three-point line or respect him as someone that can drive to the bucket, then at some point, no matter how great his defense is, you may be better off with someone else out there. So we'll have to wait and see. Is that shoulder so bad that he can't even shoot threes? That's one of many variables in this. But if it's good enough that at least it doesn't impact his shooting, and he's got a pretty textbook rotation, the way his mechanics are when he shoots. So if he can make threes, then I think between that and his overall length and how he defends, he's not especially a power player to begin with, then ultimately my guess is that he can be okay. Now, it won't be anytime soon. I think it'll at least be through the first round. My guess as to what we hear from the Rockets today is that he'll be reevaluated in a couple weeks. But ultimately, against a team like Minnesota, San Antonio, New Orleans, who the Rockets are going to play in the first round, you don't really need all of your wing defenders for that. When you need a Luke Bamute, especially, is later in the playoffs, the Warriors, the Raptors, teams like that, which is at least a month away. And I think the odds are pretty decent at this point that he will be back. So from a medical standpoint, I think, based on what we know now, very early Wednesday morning, it could be worse. There's something to take some hope out of, let's put it that way. Now in segment two, we're going to move on to the basketball side of things and a few different issues. First, it's definitely a loss. I don't mean to mitigate it when on Twitter last night I had fun at a few people's expenses that were seemingly waving the white flag on the season. Folks, injuries happen in this sport. Your chief rival, the Warriors, they're playing without the two-time MVP, and they still don't know when or even if he's going to come back. The Boston Celtics playing without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. These things happen, and as far as Luke Bamute, it's a shoulder that he already dislocated. Reality, it was sort of a ticking time bomb. Without surgery, this was probably going to happen regardless. It sucks, it's a part of the sport, and it's a loss because he's one of the Rockets' better defenders. In terms of who replaces him, in theory, Joe Johnson is the next man up off the bench, but I don't think it's necessarily that simple. Now, if Joe starts making shots from three, it could. That would be a welcome development for everyone. He did make a couple against the Lakers. Maybe that shows him getting going. But it doesn't have to be the ninth man coming in and playing more, because we've seen in the past, Mike D'Antoni, his optimal rotation is actually eight players. So it would not shock me if you see the likes of Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, Gerald Green all playing just a tick more than they were when Luke was ready. And so thus the Rockets replacing him collectively rather than just having one player step into those minutes. If there's one thing that I think it does from an X's and O's standpoint, I think it kind of takes away those tuck wagon lineups, at least to some degree. Not saying you can never run them, but ultimately if you run PJ Tucker as your backup five, then you need more options at the forward spots to fill in for PJ not playing most of his minutes at the four. So unless Joe Johnson gets going, ultimately it puts you in a little bit of a numbers game in terms of filling out the roster. So I think by extension, it makes either Ryan Anderson and Renee, I think they're hoping Ryan Anderson's still out with the sprained ankle, but they're hopeful he'll be back this weekend by the time the playoffs start. I think it makes those guys playing and playing relatively well more important because you may not have full flexibility in the early rounds to play PJ Tucker at the five. But otherwise, it's a loss, and I'm not meaning to say they can mitigate it. Gerald Green, Joe Johnson, they're not nearly as good defensively. However, they can be better shooters from the perimeter, especially if they get hot. Now, I know Joe has shot below 27% this time with Houston. That's not good, but we've seen a much longer track record of success from him throughout his NBA career. Even this year in Utah, his last 20 games, he shot over 36%. It's about where he was last year. And Joe's a guy, 36-year-old, 17-year-old veteran. It would not shock me at all if when you get to the playoffs, he flips the script, he turns the switch, and all of a sudden, he's a viable player. Again, you just have to wait and see. He's a very different type of player than Luke Bamute. Certainly defensively, there's a big drop-off. But what you hope is that if those guys make shots offensively, that can at least mitigate some of the defensive decline. Now, I'm not necessarily convinced, as far as some of the reactions I've seen on Twitter, that the Rockets just lost their most valuable or their best defender. Now, yes, that's what the numbers say. But keep in mind, Luke Bamute this year, he's averaging in the low 20s in minutes per game, and many of those coming off the bench have come against the other team's backups. He has not been closing out games, for the most part, with a healthy Rockets team, that meaning both Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker. Since the All-Star break, when the Rockets have had close to their full complement of players, especially up front, Ariza's averaging 32 minutes per game, Tucker's averaging 28, and both those guys, when the stakes have been really high, have been closer to 30 to 35 with regularity. And it's my opinion, there's a reason Trevor Ariza is playing 10 more minutes than Luke Bamute. There's a reason PJ Tucker got the start at the power forward spot and not Luke after they took Ryan Anderson out of the starting lineup. There's a reason Mike D'Antoni has said repeatedly he thinks PJ Tucker should be an all-NBA defense guy, not Luke, and that's not meant to be a shot at all. Luke is a very, very good player. What I'm pushing back against is the legitimacy of some of the numbers, because the numbers show you that Luke is the Rockets' best defender. And I think in this case, you have to combine what the numbers tell you with the eye test, which is that the numbers in a smaller sample size, especially against backups, it's sort of like we've said since Ryan Anderson moved into that backup role and it allows him to be a better rebounder. Well, yeah, because he can throw his body around a lot more in those 20 minutes. He can play with more energy. It doesn't mean you can just extrapolate that production if you put him back in the starting lineup, as we've seen the past couple of years. So with Luke, it's not meaning to downgrade him or say that he's not a valuable player at all, because he is. It's a loss. But in terms of the numbers, what they may show you in terms of his significance to the Rockets, I don't necessarily think you can make an apples-to-apples comparison with Luke off the bench to Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker, because the guys Trevor Ariza is guarding, the fact that he's doing it over 32 minutes per game, what P.J. Tucker has done as a starter since the All-Star break, there's a reason those guys are in bigger roles, and so if you're going to compare the Rockets' defenders, you need to do it on as close to level terms as you can. So just pointing to whatever the numbers Luke has off the bench and comparing them to Trevor and PJ, I don't really think that's a real fair comparison of what they bring you. Luke is a valuable defensive piece, so are Trevor Ariza, and so are PJ Tucker. So there's a lot else on this Rockets team, even defensively, besides just Luke Bamute. It sucks, it's a loss, but ultimately, he's averaging the eighth most minutes per game this year on a team that's now 65-16. The Rockets are far, far bigger than any one individual piece, as long as that piece isn't, of course, James Harden or Chris Paul. In terms of hits to their role players, it sucks, it'll hurt, but the Rockets are deeper this year than last year, really deeper than they've been in some time, and they're as well-positioned as ever to mitigate that, especially if Luke is able to come back in the later rounds when you hypothetically could play a team like Golden State or Toronto, and we'll cross our fingers as we wait for more information on the MRI results this morning in Houston. So while Luke is a valuable defensive piece, I don't necessarily agree that he is far and away the best. I think Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker are more suited to step up than some folks apparently think. Now, as far as the month that Luke missed earlier in the season, I mentioned earlier in the program about that month not being a fair timeline assessment because regular season versus playoffs, first injury versus second injury, there's a lot of different factors this time around. The other thing that I don't like that I've seen a lot of is fans, both Rockets and around the league, pointing to the decrease in the Rockets' defense from mid-December to mid-January and attributing all of that to Luke Bamute's absence. Because when the Rockets' defense fell off in that month, and yes, it did, Chris Paul missed multiple games, Clint Capella missed multiple games, James Harden missed six games. Luke Bamute and James actually came back Luke Bamute came back one game before James. So yeah, there were six games of his absence that were without James Harden. And then James Harden was effectively replaced by Gerald Green, who had no conditioning, coming off the scrap heap in late December, and admittedly had almost zero knowledge of the team's defensive schemes. So the Rockets' defense did dip, but there were a ton of extenuating circumstances in that month that went far and beyond just Luke Bamute. In fact, the Rockets have played four games without Luke with Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and James Harden all playing, and they went 4-0 in those games. Now, yes, it's a small sample size, but the point is that if you look at the games where the Rockets' defense fell, there were generally a lot other things going on besides just Luke Bamute. And for that matter, even the defenders like Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker that did play, they were so overextended because the wave of injuries the Rockets got starting in mid-December. I don't think you can really just look at what happened in that month and attribute it all to Luke Bamute. It's a loss, but if you've been following the Rockets all year, you know that that point of the year, there was a ton more going on than just Luke. So I caution anyone throwing out those numbers. Take a step back, breathe, put it in context, because you know there were significant issues going on with the Rockets up and down the roster during that month. It was not just a matter of Luke. The other thing that I have seen that I don't really like in the aftermath of this is the criticism of Mike D'Antoni. As I said earlier, with a re-injury, this was going to happen at some point anyway. It kind of was like a ticking time bomb for minimal contact to make that thing re-pop out again. But in terms of it happening in an inconsequential game, it sucks. But ultimately, there's not a whole heck of a lot that the Rockets could do. I've seen folks saying, well, promote the whole G League team. Well, you can't really do that. There are limited roster spots. The fact is, Luke Bamute is playing the eighth most minutes per game on this team. It's not like you can rest your top eight players and put them all in bubble wrap. Now, maybe if James Harden or Chris Paul or Clint Capella had gone out and gotten hurt in an irrelevant game, you could make an argument against why is Mike D'Antoni playing them, but there's no way you can field a roster while sitting all nine of your rotation players. It just doesn't work that way. There's no way you can even make the math work in terms of the roster spots for calling those guys up. It's unfortunate for Luke. It's unfortunate for the Rockets. But as I said earlier, they're not alone. Just look at the Warriors with Curry, the Celtics with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. It actually could be a heck of a lot worse as far as what the Rockets' medical report is with Ryan Anderson's sprained ankle and now Luke Bamute's dislocated shoulder going into the playoffs. But there are just certain occupational hazards with this game. And the Rockets might sit a few more people tonight in Sacramento, night two of a road back-to-back. But ultimately, they're not going to sit everyone because there's just no way that you can fill out a roster with what's left in the G League to activate. I mean, you're effectively allowed 15 players. And then of those 15 players that you've got a couple of them, Ryan Anderson and now Luke, dealing with actual injury. So effectively, you've got 13. There's just no way you can sit down your entire rotation and put them in bubble wrap. It's always going to be picking and choosing. And ultimately, Luke, while valuable, he was never going to be at the forefront of the list where you say, wow, how in the world could you play him? No, the Rockets were always going to have to take risks with someone, and it was just a free play. And if it didn't happen here, it could have happened in the playoffs, and it might be even worse because you wouldn't even have time going into the playoffs to adjust your rotation and adapt. So at this point, I have a hard time blaming D'Antoni. It's just one of those things that happens, and we'll wait and see later Wednesday for word on the MRI and hopefully get a little more clarity on his return. But ultimately, my guess on that, again, I think it's going to be more an issue of pain tolerance unless it's just a full-blown dislocation where he needs immediate surgery. The reality is he's probably going to need surgery at some point to stabilize it, but in terms of his return to the playoffs, it's his choice. It'll come down to pain tolerance, and my guess is that they'll say he's out for 2 or 3 weeks and will be reevaluated, and then we'll just have to learn at that point exactly what's going on, how he feels, if he's able to consistently put up threes without feeling that much pain, and they'll make a judgment call at that point. And hopefully, with any luck, you would be able to get him back, at least in some capacity, before you play the Golden State Warriors, potentially, in the Western Conference Finals. And that leads into the final segment of the show, which is, well, the path forward for the Rockets in the playoffs. We're going to learn a lot more tonight when the matchup gets set for the Rockets, and it doesn't matter their Sacramento game at all, as far as who the Rockets play in that 8 seed. I've described it well on Twitter, but ultimately, the Denver-Minnesota game is going to determine the last playoff team in the West. Now, it's not going to determine the Rockets' opponent because Denver wins enough tiebreakers that they cannot be the 8th seed. But if Minnesota wins, and by the way, we're assuming that Oklahoma City beats Memphis. If Oklahoma City somehow loses at home to Memphis, there's a pretty good shot that they are the 8th seed and would play the Rockets, but that's extraordinarily unlikely. Assuming the Thunder take care of business, they're going to be the 5 and 6 because they're going to be a game up on whoever's playing for the 8th spot. That's in part because the Spurs and Pelicans play each other, so one of those is guaranteed to get a loss. So Denver-Minnesota, if Denver wins, it's not going to be Denver, and that means that the loser of the San Antonio-New Orleans game, that's going to be the 8th seed. If Minnesota wins, well, if Minnesota wins and San Antonio win, then you're looking at New Orleans again because they're going to drop behind Minnesota in, well, the tiebreaker, actually, the Timberwolves hold the tiebreaker on New Orleans. The Timberwolves do not hold the tiebreaker on the Spurs. So that means if Minnesota beats Denver and New Orleans beats San Antonio, and by Vegas, those are the favorites, those are the home teams, then the Rockets would be playing Minnesota in that case because the Spurs have the tiebreaker in Minnesota. They put the Spurs to the 7 against Golden State and Minnesota as the 8. So there's pathways. The easiest are New Orleans and Minnesota. There's also a pathway for the Rockets to play San Antonio. Essentially, if you want to play San Antonio, you have to flip the Minnesota-Denver result because if Denver beats Minnesota, Denver has the tiebreaker on San Antonio. Minnesota will not. So when it comes down to who you want to play, it's some combination of Denver-Minnesota and San Antonio-New Orleans. So you're going to play Minnesota, New Orleans, or San Antonio. Some chances of Oklahoma City, but that's only if they lose, which is extraordinarily unlikely. So you're looking for one of those three teams, and ultimately, Minnesota, San Antonio, New Orleans, they all have their pluses and minuses, but the Rockets, they've won 65 games for a reason. They should be big favorites over any of them, and ultimately, if the Rockets lose, you can't really say it's about matchups if the Rockets lose to a team with 18 to 20 fewer wins than them in the first round. If that ends up happening, it's because there's something fundamentally wrong with the Rockets. It's not the matchup. It's not Luke Bamute. There's something bigger. So I have a tough time getting overly worried about that. But the only scenario I would have worried about is if it's Oklahoma City and they're all their big names, their defense, that sort of things. And fortunately, unless they just completely fall apart and lose at home against a tanking Memphis squad, that seems impossible. Really, what I think Rockets fans should focus on tonight, it's the late game Utah at Portland. It's a big deal because the winner of that game is going to win the Northwest Division, and they're going to be the number three seed. And that means either they're going to be on the Houston side of the bracket, or they're going to be on the Golden State side of the bracket. And what's interesting is that, basically, assuming Oklahoma City wins, based on how the tiebreakers go down, Utah is going to play Oklahoma City in the first round almost certainly either way. It's just a matter of, is it the 4-5 or the 3-6? The 4-5, that puts you on a path to play Houston in the second round. The 3-6, it puts you on a path to play Portland. Golden State, and then it would push Portland into the 4-5 matchup to play Houston. Now, I don't think Portland's an easy team at all. I've said that before. But ultimately, between Utah playing so well, they beat the Warriors with Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green all playing by 40 last night. It's hard not to want them on the Golden State side of the bracket. I know the Rockets beat them four times, so it's not necessarily so much that I see the Jazz being threatening to the Rockets. It's more by virtue of what you're seeing in those matchups between the Jazz and the Warriors, how could you not want the Jazz to have to go through that team, especially earlier in the playoffs, first or second round, when you don't know when or if Stephen Curry is going to return before they play the Rockets? And also, because they're kind of linked to Oklahoma City, if there's any fear of Oklahoma City flipping the switch in the playoffs and becoming really scary, well, ultimately, either way, whether you get the Jazz or Oklahoma City, if the Thunder are capable of flipping the switch, then ultimately they'll probably beat the Jazz, and then the Warriors draw that. But either way, if Utah wins tonight, they get the 3 seed, and so Portland has to play the Utah-Oklahoma City winner in the second round, Golden State does, assuming they advance. And the Rockets would play the Portland whoever winner out of the 4-5. The flip side is that if the Blazers win tonight, that pushes the Jazz-Thunder to the 4-5 matchup, and then it's the Rockets that play the Jazz-Oklahoma City winner. So, in terms of the Rockets long-term, to me, that's the biggest thing that's going to come out of tonight. You need to be pulling for the Jazz in that game. I think making the Warriors in round two, either with Stephen Curry fresh off the shelf or maybe even not playing at all, against likely a Jazz team, we've discussed how insanely well the Jazz have played down the stretch of the year. They have the league's best net rating, best record since the All-Star break. But beyond just how much they've won, yes, they've lost to the Rockets, which is good, but the matchups with the Jazz and Warriors have just been ridiculous. The Jazz have won their last three against the Warriors all in the last 2.5 months, and two of them, they've won by 30 and 40 points, and in all of those, Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green were all out there. In fact, the first one, Steph Curry was out there as well. That's when they lost by 30 at the end of January. So the Jazz, they have no fear of the Warriors at all. They seem to match up very well, even with the Warriors playing their big guns. And because of that, the other positive in this, that should make the Jazz fully motivated. Because I know some might say, well, if the Jazz are going to play the Thunder either way, then what does it really matter if the Jazz win this last game? Actually, the Jazz realize that they're playing to be on the Golden State or Houston side of the bracket. They're 0-4 against the Rockets, and only if they won the last three games against the Warriors, they won them all by 19 or more points, two of them by 30 or more points, last one by 40. So you better believe the Jazz have every incentive in the world to feel confident against Golden State and want to be on that side of the bracket. All that said, Portland's a good team. They're playing at their gym, where it's one of the loudest in the NBA. They're playing for the division title. They're playing for the 3 seed. I think everyone sees Golden State is particularly vulnerable right now without Steph Curry. The Blazers have beaten the Warriors a couple of times as well, so it's not going to be easy. Vegas has the Blazers as a 4-point favorite, which I think might be a little high. The Jazz played insanely well the past couple of months. But either way, at best, it's kind of a 50-50 draw. It could go either way. But ultimately, if the Jazz can get that win, in my opinion, it's a very big development for the Rockets. So yes, stay tuned for the first-round matchup. We'll learn who the Rockets play in the 1-8. We'll also get the schedule later tonight. But beyond that, keep your eyes peeled on that Jazz-Blazers game, because that's going to determine the path forward for the Rockets and the Warriors. And in my opinion, Jazz-Oklahoma City, the winner of that playing the Warriors in the second round, that's pretty difficult, especially given what we've seen from the Warriors-Jazz matchups in the past 2.5 months. So with that, I will wrap up today's show because, well, there's only so much you can say when everything's going to be irrelevant in a few hours anyway once we get the matchup. So We'll certainly have new and improved content in the hours ahead. In terms of our next show, we'll try and get an immediate reaction tonight once we learn the Rockets' playoff opponent, talk a little bit of X's and O's, maybe even with the other side. We'll just have to see what the schedule allows with that. And then we'll also, of course, update the Luke Bamute situation as more injury updates roll in. My guess is mid-afternoon is probably a fair characterization because he got back to Houston overnight, does need to sleep for a few hours, and then we'll see what the MRI shows us when he gets there later this morning or midday, either at Toyota Center or down at the Medical Center. So until tonight, I will sign off. Again, I'm Ben Dubose, your host. This is Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. Want more content from me or the show? Best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, LockedOnRockets.com, or email us, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about becoming a potential advertiser, also read all of our great content. There's going to be a lot more to come in the days and weeks ahead, but the Rockets embarking on their playoff run. So website, Facebook, Twitter, if you're not already following me and or the show there, then I strongly encourage you to do so. That's going to be the easiest way to send information out. Once again, the happy final Tuesday night, late Tuesday night from Staples Center. Rockets 105, Lakers 99. Rockets improved to 65-16 on the year, setting a new franchise record for wins. The unhappy results, of course, losing Luke Bamute to a redislocation of that right shoulder. So stay tuned for further updates in the hours and days ahead on that front. For now, folks, enjoy your Wednesday, and we'll be talking again very soon right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.